Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today, I'm very pleased to say, is none other than Paul Noble, founder and creative director of Spiritland, a series of venues for music lovers in London and Lisbon, and also a production company. Born into a musical family and always believing he'd do something in the music world, Paul joined the BBC as a radio producer and sound engineer, working across the very different tones of the BBC's speech and music stations. Having launched a radio consultancy in 2000, working with youth-facing clothing and alcohol brands, it was a visit to Tokyo while exec producing Monocle's magazine new radio station that set Paul, as he said, on a train track, travelling towards a destination called Spiritland. He really did say that, apparently. Inspired by the Japanese listening bar phenomenon, he'll tell us about that as well, Paul set out to open a venue with, as he says, the best sound system in the world and the most deep and involved music policy, pulling in all his musical interests. Spiritland was founded in 2014 as a pop-up before opening venues in King's Cross, Mayfair and the South Bank Centre. They're also a production company with studios and outside broadcast vehicles, and last year they opened their first international venture across six bars in a hotel in central Lisbon. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
You're a music guy. I mean, we're going to talk all about the business, but in your bones, Mr. Noble, is music. Why?
As you said, I grew up in a musical family, so everyone was playing instruments. My dad plays guitar and sax and a bit of piano. My uncle always had keyboards and drum machines and wrote a few musicals. So everyone in the house was musical, and no one can read music. Everyone just picks up an instrument and starts playing it. So growing up on the stereo was all the sort of usual Simon and Garfunkel and Led Zeppelin and Beatles and, you know, all everything that was around at the 70s, plus lots of Chick Corea, Pat Metheny, Herbie Hancock, Joe Pass, Oscar Peterson, all the jazzers of the time who were still playing. And grew up in London, so, you know, going to Ronnie Scott's and the Bull's Head in Barnes and 606 Club, that was part of my childhood. So yeah, the music was everywhere. And then I started, you know, on my own musical path, which was Capital Radio. Really was like the center of my musical world when I was a kid. And then eventually the hip hop kicked in about 14, 15.
Genres. I mean, kind of traversing all sorts of music there.
Yeah, I went all over the place, but that was the origins of it all.
Now, lots of kids, and I'm a 70s child as well. We're from a similar neck of the woods, a Wembley guy meets a Stanmore guy.
Yep.
Both still on the Jubilee line, and I'm proud of it. A lot of kids love music. We all love music. But for you, it became not just your passion, but your business world, the orientation of your life. When did you make that realization that that was going to be the case?
I did a degree at Bournemouth University, and I started off in film and TV. And at the time, we all wanted to be Quentin Tarantino. Everyone wanted to be the director, and we all wanted to make these sort of gory films. And then you start working on it, and immediately you realize there's no budget. No, you just cut. It's impossible. Whereas radio, one person, two people, three people could sit down in a studio and make something professional. And
we hope.
We'll try. It's just a much more immediate medium. And so I did a degree in radio drama. I wrote a play. I finished university, started working at the BBC as a sound engineer, and did a long induction into the sort of BBC world of sound engineering, which at the time was still reel-to-reel, cutting tape with a razor blade. And I worked at Radio 4 and 5, lots of speech radio, Desert Island Discs, Woman's Hour, worked on the news, worked on the sport on 5 Live. But I always wanted to be in the music world and at Radio 1 and 2. And that's a, you know, so does everyone else. Everyone would love to be doing Peel sessions at Maida Vale and, you know, all the festivals. And so I did an apprenticeship really at the speech side and then ended up in the music group working on Radio 1 and 2.
And we're going to pick it up in a moment back to that story of how the producer, because this is what I'm really interested in, the producer became a man of business, a person of business. Before we get to that, though, just the reel-to-reel thing, because I briefly worked at Capital Radio when I was a teenager for a few weeks in the newsroom that was called The Way It Is.
Oh, yeah.
You might remember it. And I had to splice, as it called, cutting with razor and stuff. Just visualize for me the reel-to-reel discipline. Because it's something now, of course, that one is in a studio, one has digital stuff, people can edit at home, you don't need all that thing. But then it was not the case.
Yeah, it's like a gigantic cassette, but it's two open reels. The tape travels over a playhead, and so you can stop it and you can manipulate it very finely to get to the top of a word or a sentence. You mark it off with your little China graph pen. You mark the in, you mark the out, get your razor blade, chop it, and stick it together with some sellotape, and then you can really refine that. You can chop away at it. And on the news side of radio, it gets really hairy where you could be editing the back of a program while the front's playing out. Yeah. So you get very fast.
You're in real time. And also, I remember when I used to, I cut my fingers quite a lot because I'm very clumsy. And the angle of the cut...
Oh, yeah.
It makes a difference to the way that the edit sounds.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one it was. There's obviously the 90-degree one, and then was 45.
You want it at 45.
And the 45 is smoother, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah, 90 is a bit abrupt.
Yeah.
God, and, I do remember.
And still, I can still hear on the radio, I can hear the dodgy edits.
The dodgy
fades. I'm highly critical.
Well, actually, let's fast forward now, because here we are. You became obsessed with quality of sound.
Hmm.
And equipment and leads that cost £10,000 and beautiful speakers and incredible amps and one-offs. Did that start with looking at these two reels and going, I just love...
Do you know what? It was almost totally separate. I was working with really lovely equipment at work at the BBC, and at that time there were things like EMT turntables and Studer CD players and quad amplifiers and PMC speakers and all kind of lovely... really beautiful audiophile gear, but that was, for me, that was just at work. And then at home, I was just tinkering around with my home stereo, which was, you know, at the beginning, you go to Richer Sounds and you buy Cambridge Audio and that kind of thing. And then you get on the upgrade path and you think, oh, maybe it's the CD player. And then you upgrade your CD player. No, I need to have it sitting on some special stands. And then you...
Maybe it's the quality of the lead, though.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to upgrade the amp and all you go.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the journey and not the destination. And to sort of fast forward massively, I got just very deeply into the sort of listening to really nice equipment, but not my own, other people's. And then I went to a show in Munich called High End Hi-Fi, which is where the sort of... audio nerds meet.
I was going to say, sounds like one of those great... And now, what are you doing this weekend, darling? Well, I'm going to an audio show.
Yeah.
Of course you are.
Yeah, have fun.
on your own.
It's a series of rooms, and everyone's demonstrating their equipment, so people are showing off their speakers, amps, source products, and obviously cables, which, you know, how do you demo a cable? You need to A-B it against another cable. And I went to this one room, which was a company called Living Voice, who are based in Long Eaton near Nottingham. And the sound just blew me away. I've never heard anything like it. And there's, you know, it's really hard to quantify what makes great sound. There's obviously some very muscular and sort of punchy sound systems. And then there's some very delicate ones, which are maybe more appropriate for listening to classical and jazz on. And this Living Voice equipment, it was like a time machine. You're in the room with the band or with the musicians, and it just blew me away. And so I got chatting to them. It's Kevin and Lynn are the owners, and started buying equipment from them. And then the conversation started of, you know, how could we put this in a venue? Could we do something together?
What could we actually make? And that is what I'm going to be talking about in a bit with Paul Noble, because he went to Japan and came back with an idea which was essentially riffing on this notion of the listening room, which is sort of a version of what Spiritland is right now. Much more coming up from Paul in a couple of minutes. But right now, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Innovation Series, which you can find on all the major podcast platforms. Business founders are invited to share their industry insights and practical advice for those of you thinking about getting into an industry and starting your very own thing. In this clip, focused on entering the arts industries, we hear from Fabian Riggle. He was the founder of Secret Cinema and now the founder of Lost.
The Michigan Innovation Series. Inspiration from founders of cutting-edge businesses. In association with Jazz Shapers with Michigan Derea.
I never raised any capital at the beginning. It was always about basically putting the tickets on sale, the money would come in, and then we'd spend it on the show, which is always a bit of a risky way. Most theatre producers or, you know, film producers will raise the capital from investors and then, you know, build the shows. But we, the actual audience, were always investing in the shows, and it gave us that freedom to not have to like compromise. For a long time, we never had to answer to anyone. We just created the show. And that's the thing I would say to anyone who's got a good idea, is it's critical to make sure that you do your thing and you don't get too compromised by the money that comes in. Now it's a very exciting time because essentially everything is up for reinvention, and including the way that artists release work and how that work is owned. To any budding entrepreneur, make sure that you legally understand what you're doing. The management system, the label system, the representation system, the ownership of the masters or the ownership of your film. Yeah, things are shifting. And I think it's just extraordinary the resource that you have now to build an enterprise, or, you know, you can literally, with 1,000 people that follow you, you can create a business. So that's just your family, your friends, and then times five.
The Mishcon Innovation Series, in association with Jazz Shapers, with Mishcon Dureya.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishcon Dureya. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your favourite podcast platform. My guest today is Paul Noble, founder and creative director. I didn't mention the creative director, Paul, but now I just have. Founder and creative director of Spiritland, a series of venues for music lovers in London and Lisbon, and also a production company. So we have whizzed around. Time travel allows us to do that. We've jumped backwards and forwards, but essentially, the person in front of me is a geek when it comes to delivering, in a nice way, Paul. I like geeks.
I'll take
it's okay.
It. Yeah.
Take that. A geek when it comes to the quality of the audio, and also an adventurer. You jump on planes, you work for Monocle, as it was then, discover this amazing world, and Japan is extraordinary, still surprising at every turn. You discover this idea, and you kind of bring back your version of it. And in 2014, you open your first pop-up. When you've moved from being the producer behind the scenes to sort of the impresario in front of it, what was that like for you? Was that uncomfortable?
It was a strange but also felt quite natural shift. I was spending time in Japan with Monocle. There was a bureau over there, so I was traveling there to work on radio projects. And I'd heard about the listening bar scene and their sort of approach to music, but
this is like 6 to 8 people in the room. They pay a bit of money and they just listen to the owner playing an album.
Yeah. The usual setup is it's the owner in their record collection. It's usually all on vinyl. It's sometimes very high-end equipment and sometimes just lovely equipment. But they tend to like JBL speakers, Tannoys, Macintosh amps. You usually see the same things over and over again. But there is an integrity and a sort of depth of credibility in what they do, where it's just totally single-minded. Most of them you'll pay a cover charge, so you've already sort of invested to be in there and give the music some attention. And they will just play an album from start to finish. Now, lots of them, there'll be a book. They send out a book, and you can request either an artist or an album, and they'll play it for you. And it's nothing to do with club culture. It's nothing to do with DJing. They're divided by genre. So there's some are blues bars, some are strictly jazz, some are even from, you know, one era of jazz. And there's, for example, a classical music bar called Lion, which goes back to the 1920s. So they come in all sorts of different formats.
But you had an idea that it was portable in some form.
I was there for 5 weeks with my wife, and we traveled around the country. And these aren't just in Tokyo and Kyoto, they're all over Japan. And I spent the whole time thinking, I'm in heaven. I go to these bars. I'm absolutely...
What was your wife thinking?
Oh, no, she was into it too. She was loving it. I mean, there's a few photos of her having a nap in a bar. But no, it was just a musical paradise. And in London, you know, I go to concerts, I go to clubs, I buy music, I DJ, you know, everything. And also with a lot of my friends, our whole world revolves around music. But to go to a bar in London, you're going to hear jazz, funk, and soul. To go to a club, it's going to be house, techno, drum and bass, some version, you know, something electronic and banging. And then all of these other genres, which I'm interested in, and I'm kind of exploring, but on my own, you know, just on my stereo, Americana, dub, ambient, country, indie, AOR, everything. Whatever, everything.
Yeah.
It's all just sort of a solo pursuit.
But then you open this thing up, and I just want to jump to that first night in Shoreditch.
Yes.
What was it like? What did it feel like? Was it an extraordinary feeling sharing your vision with people?
Yeah, so it happened quite quickly. I did this long trip to Japan in March of 2014, came back and then met my then business partners who just opened a restaurant called Merchant's Tavern with Angela Hartnett and Neil Borthwick. So a really beautiful room, very high-end food and drink offer. And I came back and said, I've got an idea. It's called Spiritland, and it's just a very deep exploration and celebration of many genres of music with DJs, but it's not a club. There's no dance floor. They're just playing music for the joy of listening to it. And it was a hit. It was supposed to be a three-month pop-up. It ran for 2 years. We had DJs who would be playing to much, much bigger crowds, playing their personal pursuits. So, for example, Andrew Weatherall, the late, great Andrew Weatherall, played there, and he played a night of rockabilly and dub and, you know, the kind of stuff he plays away from the dance floor. Elijah Wood, you know, the actor who's actually a massive music head, played a night of Turkish progressive rock and the most obscure 70s music.
I've got to say, I know we're going to have some more music, we're going to cut in, but Paul is telling me this, he's literally almost got tears in his eyes. That's the point. That's the point about the impact of music on this man and what he's wanted to bring to London and now Lisbon, and I'm sure more places too. The adventurous side of you, Paul. I mean, music is an adventure in its own way because you keep discovering. But your love of travel, and then I think I read somewhere that you fell in love with hospitality, as it were. Has all that, is that working for you, or do you still go the primacy is about the music?
Spiritland at the heart is a music brand. Everything around it is aligned to the quality of the music. And when I say the music, it's the programming and the equipment. So our food and drink offer, our interiors, our sort of presence online, it's all sort of in service of the music, and it's all considered. It's all at the highest level we can do it. And it's quite modest as well. There's a sort of integrity to just putting on an album and playing it rather than, you know, similarly with cocktails, you can make a fantastic drink with three ingredients. You don't need to start smoke bombs. And
so there's I sense from you there's an authenticity and a simplicity to what you bring, unvarnished, sort of not flashy, basically.
Yeah.
And is that part of your personality, do you think? Do you think that's very much you?
I mean, Spiritland is certainly a manifestation of all of my interests, which is music, equipment, food, drink, interiors. It's a very, you know, if you come in, it's a very sociable space. You'll meet people and there's connections and things start happening there.
And look, it's gone really well. And then, of course, COVID hit and everyone in the hospitality business was, you know, whacked by that in different ways, some more mortally than others. You lost the Royal Festival Hall venue. Without being sort of too emotional about it, what did that feel like at the time? Was that like the death of of someone you knew well?
It was really tough because we opened our first proper venue in 2016 in King's Cross, and that's a 70-seat cafe, bar, radio studio. And there's only so much you can do in that space, and we wanted to do something bigger. We started talking to the South Bank, who had this fantastic space at the foot of the Royal Festival Hall, where I've been going to see concerts for years. And it's also, you know, the South Bank, I think it's 16 acres. It's the biggest arts centre in
Europe.
It's
incredible.
You've got the BFI National Theatre.
Was Jude Kelly running the South Bank then?
Yeah.
And actually she was on this programme many, many, many years ago. Amazing woman.
And, you know, maybe it felt like the food and drink weren't aligned with the quality of the sort of creative content coming out of the National, the South Bank Centre.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of chains. We were the only independent and we just had horrible timing. We opened at the end in December 2018. So we spent 2019 finding our people, letting them know there was somewhere they could come and eat, drink before, after the shows. We worked with a lot of the organizations there. We did after parties for the BFI. We did a lot of record launch. We did work with a lot with the music industry quite heavily. So we did album launches for Bruce Springsteen, John Legend, Leonard Cohen, which his son presented. And we did some great stuff, but it only ran for a year. 2020, everything shut. And then the South Bank didn't open between the lockdowns. So when it did open, it was just into a very different London where the three-day week was a real thing. People had moved their businesses out to Europe. So we were, it was just a very different scene. And we ran for, I don't know, maybe a year or so longer. And then it went. And now it's, you know, in the world of hospitality, just places come and go. You see it happen quite quickly.
But Spiritland lives on, and we look forward because we've got other stuff to talk about, which we will be doing in our final chat. That's with Paul Noble, my business shaper today, founder of Spiritland, very much still going. And we've also got some music from Kamasi Washington. That's all coming up in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
Kamasi Washington featuring Patrice Quinn. Wasn't that beautiful? With Cherokee. Just for a few more minutes, Paul Noble is my business shaper. He's the founder of Spiritland. I know you're in Lisbon, and there's going to be more stuff, I'm sure. But I, as I've been talking to you, I've been thinking, all roads were always going to lead to this, Paul, for you. I don't think you could have had another journey, even though your journey has been BBC, and then you've gone and done your own thing. But it feels like you've been compelled to be in this world.
Compelled is the right word. And it wasn't a conscious decision to move into hospitality. And I'd never worked in bars or restaurants. But it was a moment of, if I don't do this, who's going to? And it was just a pure compulsion.
But also it's just you. There is no creation of a persona called Paul Noble who wanted to have an idea. This is just who you are.
Yeah. And also my business partner, Sophie, who's the other part of Spiritland. Everything that happens in Spiritland is sort of comes back to the two of us. It was a sort of massive midlife career swerve from radio, and I'd done so much radio. I was sort of at the end of my radio journey, and now, it's hospitality, venues, spaces, and we also collaborate a lot within Spiritland with the music industry, but also within film, literature, fashion. You know, everyone. All of these creatives have a musical inner life, which we can work together on. So,
that's the thing I was thinking about. If you're the creator, which you are, and you're the creative director, it must be super painful. We talk about the Royal Festival Hall, but it could be anything that when it doesn't work out. And is your relationship with business more stressful than your relationship with music and with the hospitality, or have you become? Do you now enjoy the business side of it much more? Honest answer, please.
Honest answer is it's been a huge, huge learning curve for me. And before, I was just a radio guy, sort of paid by the hour or by the year, and I would turn up to a studio like this and either push buttons around or put together a show. And the whole process, you know, I was very green about all of it, company structure, having employees, building a brand, you know, it was all new to me, and also dealing with investors and landlords. Yeah, it's been a massive learning curve. It's been, you know, incredibly challenging at times, and you listen to any entrepreneur podcast or read any books, and everyone's, you know, it's how much pain can you take before you throw in the towel, seems to be.
And how much pain can you take?
Well, I mean, I'm sitting here.
You are.
Spiritland's still going, and we've just opened six venues in Lisbon. So,
and how is that in a nutshell?
It's really good. It's a really exciting city. We are doing it in a hotel in very central Lisbon. Two of them are music-based bars. One is our love letter to Japan, and it's very inspired by the listening bars of Japan. The other one is a more DJ-led bar, and then there's four other bars which are all doing something different with drinks. Two of them are outdoors, one's by a pool. So it's a big canvas for us to do.
So all the different parts of your brain, basically, are now brought to life.
Yeah.
And just in terms of the next step, is there more international expansion planned?
We would love to do more internationally. There's European cities which are really of interest, and also we would love to do something in Tokyo, which, you know, sounds extremely close to Newcastle, but I think there is space for the British listening bar to come back to Japan, and it's a really full-on celebration of British music, and that could be Beatles, Bowie, Kate Bush, Radiohead, Ezra Collective, it's sort of all of our interests and all of our loves, and, you know, also bringing a British approach to food and drink. So that...
You heard it here first.
Who knows?
Sounds like a good idea to me. Paul, it's been brilliant chatting to you. Thank you so much for your time. Just before I let you disappear to do more creative things, you lucky man, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
It's Praise by Pat Metheny. It's on the album First Circle. And there was one bar in Tokyo, which I kept going back to, which I just, a really special place. And they, on the last night I was there 10 years ago, they played this song. And it's a really, really special song to me. It's one of my, it just, like all Pat Metheny's music, it just kind of makes my heart explode. And without being too woo-woo, I was like, this is a sign. Someone's trying to tell me something.
Pat Metheny there with Praise, the song choice of my business shaper today, Paul Noble. An absolute focus and a passion for music, and it's defined what his life and what his business has been about. The ability to shift from one career to another. The radio person became a business person, but again, the common thread, a love of music, and then a love of hospitality, and now a love of giving people pleasure. Great stuff. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM.
In partnership with Mishkondareya.
It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.
The semi-annual warehouse clearance event is on at Sleep Outfitters. Save up to $1,000 store-wide with our lifetime price guarantee and 100% comfort guarantee. Why shop anywhere else? Limited time clearance savings only at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com.